Hey there, hi there, ho there. You are watching the Q&A show of Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Monday, May 11th. It is 12 noon Eastern time. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for liking, following, and sharing the show. All right, so here's how this goes. For the next hour or so, Jamarl or myself and or myself and or producer Robbie will answer any and all questions, comments, etc., either in the live chat on YouTube or on the Rumble feed. If you're watching later on, you have to do this live in order to participate. But you know, we'll come up with. I think we should do maybe a Q&A show where we accumulate, where we post an email address, and we have everybody just send in their emails, and we can just catch up with the people who can't do anything live because they're stuck at work or whatever. They have obligations that make it impossible for them to do that. Nice to see you, JT. Long time. Been a whole hour and a half, 2 hours.
It's been forever, man. It's been forever.
Forever. Wait, you're on Utah?
I'm sorry? Say that again.
Since this morning?
Yeah, I know, right? No, same time. Same.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm losing my mind.
Same outfit.
Didn't sleep
I just
well.
Didn't change. Time.
Allergies have been killing me. Okay, so I'm trying to think what else we need to put in here. Robbie, am I forgetting any housekeeping?
Nope, nothing.
Okay, all right. So, all right. So if you've got a question, please go ahead and let us know what it is. I'm trying to think if there's any breaking news or anything. The only breaking news that I'm aware of is that some details that are not terribly exciting have come out about what transpired between Iran and the United States. Iran came back and wanted reparations, and they wanted to what was the other thing? Oh, they wanted acknowledgement of their sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz, and they wanted all of the sanctions lifted.
Right.
The U.S. basically said they're willing to talk about the sanctions, but the Strait of Hormuz is a non-starter, and so is the first condition.
Well, the nuclear thing, too. I mean, the United States is making demands that Iran has been turning down for like a year or more, basically.
Yeah.
We're not stop doing it. We're not going to talk about the ballistic missile program. These things are off the table, and they're off the table until the blockade ends. Like, meaning... Right. This is not something we're going to talk to you about, considering you've attacked us in the middle of negotiations the first time around and have another unprovoked attack this time around. We need to end the wars, not just this war, but your dog in the Middle East, Israel, that is committing those wars. Now, they're being strong about it, as they should be.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I don't see how you settle this. You know, this is kind of like when you go to the flea market and someone's selling an item and they want it, you know, you're thinking that's a $8 item and they want $100. And you're like, should we even negotiate? Cause it's like, we're so far apart. There's nothing really to talk about here. We're not going to be able to get to a sale. Right.
But getting to the sale in this case, the allegory would be, we need to fight over it to determine whether I'm strong enough to sustain the position that I'm in. Meaning what they're fighting over ultimately is, are we strong enough to defeat you militarily? And how much work would it take for us to do so? And Iran's point is, you're not strong enough to do so. And we do not have to meet. Meaning if you are the stronger party, there's this understanding or this kind of contextualization of, okay, this is the stronger party. I have to accede to the stronger party in this because otherwise they can inflict X amount of damage on me in this process. But if you have a disagreement on the relative strengths of each party, then the only way to fight that out is through fighting, which is why I always thought this war was going to take place. And I go further that I always thought the war was necessary for Iran to establish you are not as strong as you think you are. There are limits to your power. And this is them meeting that limit. It's just, I don't know another way around it.
By the way, one of the truly surreal aspects of these negotiations is this thing about, you know, who has control of the Strait of Hormuz. It's kind of like, I mean, the map determines that, right? Geography determines that. I mean, it's sort of like, even if Iran promises, we will never, ever lay our hands on the Strait of Hormuz forever and ever, no matter what. I mean, okay, they can say that. But if you're the United States or any other country who has shipping going through there, you're like, but the reality is they have take backs anytime they want, because they're there, they live there. And that's just reality. And similarly, if the United States says, well, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, why are you even discussing that? I mean, just by being Iran, you have control over the Strait of Hormuz. I don't understand, like, why that's even something that you would even bother to negotiate. I mean, you could ask for a commitment to allow shipping, sure. But when you get to the big top issue of, you know, like, who has sovereignty over it? It's like, well, partly international waters, but the fact is we know who has control over it. Sovereignty doesn't matter.
These things are an issue of power. If the U.S. had power to take the Strait of Hormuz, then it would have, and in which case it would assert sovereignty over it. And even in the context of Iran, I mean, for God's sake, the U.S. is asserting the right to tell Iran that it can't have nukes or that it needs to give up its uranium. We're well beyond the issue of sovereignty being acknowledged, right? Like, this is well beyond that. Like, right. We just kidnapped Maduro and threw him into a cage that, you know, in a gulag, for God's sake. Sovereignty, from our point of view, doesn't matter. From our point of view, power determines sovereignty. Power determines whether or not Iran controls the strait. If we can take over the government, if we can knock down that government and turn it into chaos, then they don't own anything in the strait. And geography doesn't determine anything, because they're a state. That government itself has been destroyed. That's what I'm trying to point out. Like, from my point of view, we are looking at this stuff as a hegemon that is out of control. And that is just decided. Nobody's sovereignty matters. We will put tariffs on anybody for any particular reason. We would use our currency to destroy your country for any particular reason. If you just offend us, if we don't like you, hell, if you have social media accounts that are critical of Israel, maybe we will even go after you for sanctions. Like, it's that level of sanity, right? And so, no, we don't care about the sovereignty, in which case you're forcing them to fight to assert their sovereignty. And either we acknowledge that from the amount of pain that we have to encounter in the process of this action, or we don't. But that stuff gets meted out on the battlefield, which is what is being fought about now. Does Iran have sovereignty to A, control their own affairs in context of either nuclear power or just existence as a state? And now, the war booty that was taken because of the war, meaning the Strait of Hormuz, from the standpoint of Iran, do you have the power to stop them from holding it? I think both of those things are no. No, I don't think you have the power to stop them from holding the strait, as you point out, geographical reasons. And no, I don't think you have the ability to tell them what they do in their country.
I mean, the thing is, what's remarkable here is the United States has been defeated, and its defeat in many ways is more profound in 6 weeks than the defeat that it suffered in 14 years of fighting in Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, right? In the end, okay, so what did the United States lose when it lost Vietnam? I mean, obviously, war material, cash, money, treasure, lives. Okay, fine. But we have a lot of those. We go over there. We try to prop up the government of South Vietnam. Why? So we have access to cheap manufacturing to some extent and some natural gas. But that's, and supposedly to fend off the commies. Okay, but in the end, where at the end of the war, where were we? No worse off, really. We waited, you know, another 10 years. John McCain went to Vietnam. We got access to the natural gas, more cheap manufacturing. We don't care about the Republic of South Vietnam. The commie stuff was a fever dream. So we're not really worse off. The United States didn't really lose anything. But with Iran, we had something that we now no longer have, which was free. We had free passage through the Strait of Hormuz, and we had international oil markets that we could manipulate and control to our benefit of manufacturing. That's gone forever in 6 weeks. That's a huge defeat in a very short time. I mean, if I mean, the most that the United States could hope for is to mitigate the damage now. There's no victory. Victory is not happening. You might, I don't think you can get to a draw. I mean, I think, you know, you've lost. You've lost something that you had and you can't get back. And it happened in just a matter of weeks. What a bunch of morons. And, you know, Netanyahu gave an interview, and we'll get to the questions, yesterday on 60 Minutes. And he was asked, did you anticipate that that Iran would block the Strait of Hormuz? He basically said no. He said no one would have seen that coming. I'm like, no.
They said they were going to do it. They said they were going to do it. They've been saying it for years. Like, I don't even know why this is shocking that they did. I'm sorry.
Is Netanyahu lying or is he stupid or is it both?
It could be both. I don't know. I mean, like, racist people don't see the world clearly. I am a firm believer in that. Like, racist people don't see the world clearly. And maybe in his mind, I don't doubt for a moment that they were telling Trump, hey, look at all the protests. Hey, let's give these people weapons to create internal dissension while we simultaneously attack them. And we will be able to knock over the government and they will fall apart, et cetera. I don't doubt that that's what he was telling Trump, right? Mm. The catch is he dumb enough to believe that? Now, everybody in the room apparently
why not, dumb why enough not to believe just, why not do an old-fashioned CIA arm the opposition kind of thing instead?
They did. That was the protests. I mean, they said as much. Trump was like, he was screaming at the Kurds because the Kurds apparently didn't give the weapons to the protesters that they were going to give. And it was leaked. I would say leaked, take it with a grain of salt, that there were internal dissent, that it was being driven externally from the country. That, yeah, kind of like in Syria, where some of the people were there as a legit protest, but it was always infused by people who were there to try to take down the government, saying something very similar in Iran. Meaning, it wasn't coincidental that the attacks came after the protests, if that makes sense.
Mm.
It just didn't work.
Right.
It just didn't work. And it failed. I mean, they did it twice, even in the 12-day war. If you remember, in the 12-day war, Israel instigated a lot of spy networks to attack internally in the country while they were attacking externally in the country. It took Iran like 2 or 3 days before it really got going on air defense and things like that, because there were drones that were happening internally in the country. They had videos of policemen jumping out cars with guns, chasing guys down who had drone trucks and stuff like that internally in the country, meaning they shot their load the first time around with a huge spy network. The second time around, they also had spy networks that were ginning up the internal dissension, like these kind of Maidan type things. It just didn't work. It failed. They tried.
So insane. All right, we have a leftover question from last Q&A. So here we go. This is from Phileas Fobb. Hey, Robbie, Ted said that Australia and some other Western countries have a two-party system and poor electoral turnout. One, Australia has a multi-party system, although most parliamentary seats are held by two parties. But there's usually a third party whose power is in hiding the balance of power. Okay, thanks for that clarification. Ted and or JT seem to be confusing ranked choice voting, called optional preferential in some other places, with proportional voting. Australia has ranked choice voting in the federal lower house and proportional voting in its upper house.
No, I'm not confusing those. So if you're in Germany, for example, they would have, let's say people went out, they voted, and you found out that 5% was Ted and JT party. Then Ted and JT party gets a certain percentage of the parliament when they get elected. Ranked choice voting is different. Ranked choice voting is like what they have in California. No, I know the difference.
Okay. All right. Operators Kinch. Do you guys think Benjamin Netanyahu was trying to tell the American people that we're going to have boots on the ground?
You want me to answer that, or you want to answer that?
Yeah, I'm actually cogitating. I was kind of like thinking, I'm going to think about that while JT answers.
I think it is a hard pill for me to swallow that we put boots on the ground. I don't know how we do it. Because if you think about it, like, what are you going to do? Have a military buildup? You're going to send a million men into Iran? Is that what you're going to do? And how are you going to do that? How long is it going to take to do that? Like, meaning how, like, and you're doing that with withering political opposition from the American public. Meaning this is not where you've seeded the ground, where you have, you know, 60% approval for a military conflict, where you're putting boots on the ground, like in Iraq or something like that. It's not that. You're at 30-something percent approval rate. And your polling on the war is just as bad, if not worse. I don't know how you go to the American public said, and by the way, this war that we're losing, now we need to put boots on the ground in Iran, and it's going to take X amount of, you know, weeks to build up the military force. This is not the 1990s. This is not the 2000s. I don't see it. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. These people are idiots. But man, you talking about compounding a blunder? That would be breathtaking. I don't see it. I could be wrong.
I agree. Look, I 100% agree with you. It's the same sort of thing. I don't see it. Could be wrong. Look, we see a lot of bluster from this administration, right? I mean, they tell us, we don't, you know, they broadcast insouciance, right? We don't care about the rising gas prices, a small price to pay. Look how long we were in Afghanistan and Vietnam. No big deal. Then we get the reports that behind closed doors, they're scared to death and they're panicking and they're like, holy shit, what the fuck are we going to do? I think this is exactly like that. They know, like, they're like, yeah, like, you know, they send out the social media feeds. We're kicking ass and taking names. You know, we're so much winning, we can hardly stand it. And then it's like, yeah, but behind closed doors, they're like, fuck. I don't even think that's individually. I think like they have cabinet meetings where they're like, fuck. And so, the Iran Lego videos, I think pretty much have Trump's number. Right. It's kind of like, no, I don't see with 33 to 37% approval rating and 52 points underwater on the war. I don't see how you send boots, you know, there's boots on the ground. You can send them, but, you know, I mean, all you're doing is you're leading. I don't know. But then, well, you're setting up a midterm disaster. We should talk a little bit. We didn't do this. We didn't talk about the court ruling in Virginia against the Democratic gerrymander attempt. Up until now, it had looked like Democrats were successfully fighting back against the Republican gerrymandering with enough gerrymandering of their own in blue states in order to be able to neutralize it. But with the Virginia State Supreme Court, this puts Democrats back on their heels again, and they feel like they might still lose, probably still will lose the House of Representatives, but it might not be as much of a blowout as they were worried about.
Yeah, I saw that. I think if I'm not mistaken, I was getting like a pedicure or something like that when it came on TV. But yeah, they basically pointed out, they struck it down. They, if I'm not mistaken, they said it was illegal in a way that they went about it, something to that effect, in which case this can't go past. Democrats had asked that they put it on pause, basically still allow it to go through while it was being reviewed by the court. Well, at that point, it ultimately did not. The court, A, didn't let it go through, but B, struck it down. So they are back to the drawing board and trying to fix whatever they were trying to fix. That's assuming they can even get this off the road, off the ground legislatively anymore before it gets to elections.
Yeah. So, I mean, by the way, the Democrats are freaking out. According to the New York Times, they had an exclusive article saying that Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader, basically was presiding over a meeting of Virginia Democrats in which they were actually thinking about some kind of back, like this is, seems like outlandish, but some kind of like workaround to depose the Virginia Supreme Court and try to get a new ruling by basically changing the retirement age for Supreme Court justices in the state, or I should say in the Commonwealth, and so that they would all be forced to retire, and then they could replace them and put in for another ruling in time. I mean, that's none of this is going to happen, right? But it's
that seems so outlandish. Like, look, two things. One, I think they should do it. This is law of the jungle. This is political combat. The other side has no reservations for doing any of this stuff. Republicans will do it in a heartbeat. I don't have any issue with them doing it. I don't care. Both parties are trash to me. Two, this is a pipe dream. There's no way you're going to get them. So the plan is to get them to retire, get new ones in, and then get a new ruling all before November. Yeah, it's not going to
happen. No, it's insane.
I appreciate their energetics and thinking of it, right? Like, I get your intent. They need a better plan.
Okay, another question here. Why, this is from Primal Barbarian, why are people denying Israel being an apartheid state? And is there a difference between that and an ethno state?
No, there's not. I mean, if your bias is for, I mean, look, an apartheid state is not necessarily a compliment. Right?
No.
So you can imagine that people who support Israel are not going to own it. Was that here? Dog? Oh, okay. Yeah, they just don't want to own it. It's just, you know, it's like what? If you go with this idea that it's the most moral military, and you go with the idea that this is God's chosen people. Okay, yeah, God's chosen people are running an apartheid state in which they have themselves as being somehow superior and second-class citizens in the other case where you can pretty much do whatever you want to without there any being consequence for it. Yeah, it's an apartheid state. And no, they don't want to own it because apartheid states are not necessarily the most kind thing that you can call a particular state. I guess the question is do you think that all ethno-states are apartheid states?
No, I don't think so. So I think an ethno-state is a state that where identity is placed around a certain ethnic group, right? So the idea of Israel was it's a Jewish state, therefore you have to be Jewish to be a full-fledged member of it. And it's first and foremost about, it's a home for Jewish people, right? In fact, it's home for a specific kind of Jewish people, right? Like it's, there's like Reform Jews aren't considered full Jews under Israeli law, for example. Mm-hmm. But it's possible to be an ethno state and not be an apartheid state, right? I'm trying to think of an example of that. Like Saudi Arabia, I think, is an ethno state, I would say.
Okay. Ethno in what sense?
Oh, Japan is basically an ethno state in that, like, it's so homogenous, it's de facto. Right? It's so homogenous. It's almost impossible for someone who's non-Japanese in ethnicity to become a citizen. It's virtually impossible. It has happened, but it's very, very hard. It places its Japanese supremacy, you know, it's worn out in public. It's very clear. But it's not an apartheid state. But right. Now I'm trying to think, can you be an apartheid state and not? Well, South Africa wasn't an ethno state. South Africa was apartheid South Africa was well aware of the fact that whites were a small minority of the population, that it was basically a colonial project, and it was proudly trying to keep on, but it was an apartheid state. So I think you can have Israel's both. Because of the way that it treats non-Jews and Jews, and specifically targets Palestinians, and totally differently. Like literally, it even sorts their traffic through differently based on their different license plates. Yep. Right. So, yeah, It's a really good question, though.
I guess I agree with that with Japan. I mean, that's a good point. I guess when I was in Japan, I didn't feel that way, but I wasn't trying to be a citizen of Japan, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Yeah, Japan might be a good example, de facto. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean it's super interesting. All right, so question here from Matthew 3000. What if the plan was to close the strait all along? What if they wanted oil prices to rise, inflation to rise, and possibly even famine and global chaos?
Who wanted it? Israel or Iran?
Doesn't say. I think. I guess we're talking about like the Trump administration, right?
Oh, I don't think they wanted that. I don't think they wanted that. I think Trump's blockade is a response. I think Trump legitimately thought they were going to knock over the government. Like, I don't think these are rational minds would have said, this isn't going to work. And what happens if it doesn't work? And it doesn't seem like that factored into the opinion. It seemed like we're attacking them. We're going to take them down. Oh my God, we didn't take them down. And oh my God, they've taken us straight. Now what are we going to do? Oh, let's blockade.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that the blockade can't be sustained by the United States. Iran has all sorts of land routes at this point that have opened up. Not to mention Iran has just had a train going to China. And Pakistan has opened up all these land routes for Iran to get his oil through, meaning it extends the amount of time that Iran can last in a way that I don't think, meaning, do you think the U.S. can maintain this for 3-4 months? I don't think so.
That's and about, yes, and that's about it.
Yeah.
About like, 3-4 months is like game over. It can, yeah. Can it get past Labor Day? I don't see it.
That's what I mean. Like the blockade is not a tactic that the U.S. can hold. And the pain that's going to go to Europe and to Africa and to South America and to us is going to be overwhelming. Again, I could be wrong on this. I don't see how we accept what is coming our way. And by the way, if you escalate, that may even be worse. Because if you're hitting Iran and you're hitting infrastructure, what do you think Iran is going to do in response? They're going to hit infrastructure. They're going to go after Bahrain. They're going to go after Saudi Arabia. They're going to go after all of these places. And then it's not going to be an issue of turning back on capacity. It's just not going to be there in general. Like, there is no good options. This was a blunder of epic proportions. But and we're gonna feel it.
Yeah, it clearly was. All right, here's from Sean Lewis. Any word about John coming back on as a guest? I ask since it seems he's limited to what his agency will let him do now. Do you think he would get the green light to come back on the show as a guest? I don't know. Look, I haven't heard from John at all since in any form since the morning before his last show. So I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know what, if anything, CAA is telling him to do. I don't know if he wants to come back on as a guest. I don't know. I literally am just completely at a loss. I don't know what to say about that. Yeah, don't know. I mean, he's certainly welcome to come back on as a guest, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I like John. I've always liked John. He's very affable.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. You know, I guess that's a question for him. Have we discussed the trend of groups of people running into Scientology buildings and see how far they can get? Hilarious.
What?
I've not heard at all.
I hope they have their arms in the, what is it, the run where they pull their arms behind their back as they're running through the thing. Oh God, what was the thing? It's not called Occupy Roswell. It was the run on Roswell. What is it called? There was a catchy title for it. Do you remember this? Where it became this big trend where the people were like, we're going to meet up on this date and we're going to do the, what is it, the Naruto run where they run with their arms behind their back. So we're going to do it to Area 51. And the and so many people were going to do it. I mean, the guy started as a gag. It took form. And people were like, I'm going, I'm coming, I'm coming. And you had all of these people, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people saying, we're going to go to Area 51 and we're going to do the Naruto run to Area 51. That the military came out and said, don't do this. You will die. We will kill you. Don't do this. I hope they do it with their arms behind their back. That is hilarious.
It is very, very, very funny. John Park asks, and this is a good question, what would be your guys' top five priorities the next president should actually address?
Go for it. Well, poverty is my top one.
Yeah, I have to agree with that one. I'd have to say healthcare.
Wars.
Permanent unemployment. Yeah, well, yeah, militarism. Permanent, we need permanent unemployment benefits. So, like, if you lose your job, you get payment from the government, like, indefinitely. Job retraining program for people who want it.
What is that for?
Housing affordability.
But see, that falls into poverty for me.
Yeah, it's a subject. Yeah.
I guess what I'm asking, do you see a difference between that and dealing with poverty alleviation? Like the moment that you deal with the poverty part, all that stuff seems to fall under.
Yeah, one's a subset of the other, right? I mean, affordability is obviously key to fighting poverty. If things are affordable, then you're going to have less poverty, but you'll still have some poverty.
So but that just means you need abundance. If you have more, then it costs less. But that's not really the way our system works. I mean, and that goes at the heart of the system in general, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Okay. If Russia was justified to invade Ukraine because it had a hostile foreign power and alliance close to its borders, would the West have been justified in invading the Soviet Union during the Cold War for the same reason?
It would have wanted to. It just couldn't. They don't. I mean, do you really want to fight a war in a sense? Like, meaning, do you really want to fight a nuclear war? And if you're talking about that end of World War II, well, what do they call it? Operation Unthinkable or something like that, that they were counting going after the Soviet Union or something like that. Right. Like meaning Russia or the Soviet Union had just proved itself when it killed 90% of the Nazis that were on the Eastern Front. The West was not, Patton wanted to have that fight. The West did not. They had just fought a bitter war, right? You just had tens of millions of people came, and these guys were your allies in that fight. Do you really want to turn around and have that fight? And if we think about it, the United States, for the most part, still, there was still the strangulation of the Soviet Union. I mean, even the expansion of NATO going almost tried to create this Hobbes choice in regards to dealing with Soviet Union. The issue wasn't whether or not they wanted to. The issue was they didn't have the power to. This stuff wasn't about feelings. It was about, do you have the capability of doing X or Y? And are you willing to take the lift in order to do it? And what are the consequences of it? That's foreign policy. It's not about, you know, if they could, they would have. And they still had things like Operation Gladio, where they were using like terrorists and stuff like that in order to try to destabilize the Soviet Union. No, I mean, they tried.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my take. Give me your take on this. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. You're a student of history.
Well, first of all, I have to admit, I don't understand the analogy at all because, like, basically, Russia, and I am very sympathetic to this, as people know, Russia basically was worried because it's like, look, we have Ukraine, we have hundreds of miles of border with them, right? And if Ukraine becomes hostile to us and becomes a vassal state of a hostile foreign military alliance, then that's dangerous to us, especially considering the fairly recent history of the largest invasion force in human history crossing that border and killing 28 million of our citizens, right? The United States doesn't have never had a border with the Soviet Union.
Right.
So there's no, I mean, the closest border, I guess you could say, is Alaska and Eastern Siberia, but that's sort of neither here nor there. So, I mean, the United States never found itself in that position. A better analogy would be if, like, Mexico or Canada had sought to join the Warsaw Pact during the Cold War. Yeah. Would that have served as a justification? Well, I guarantee you the United States would have invaded.
100%. We would have decimated Mexico.
Under Mexico, a Democratic president, decimated. Under a Republican president, under any president, they yes. would invade. No American president would tolerate that regardless. So, you know, would it be justified morally, legally? That I can't say, but certainly, you know, I mean, that's what would happen.
Yeah, we wouldn't have thought twice. Agreed. And by the way, to make that clear, they were knocked over, meaning Ukraine was knocked over. Ukraine, it had in their constitution that they weren't supposed to, you know, join NATO or anything like that. They just removed it from the constitution. Like, at the point where the U.S. overtook that country, they were going to join NATO if they got the opportunity to do so. And they had de facto joined NATO. The fact that they have the largest military in Europe, short of the Russians, gets across the lethality of that military. And the fact that the Russians are fighting for 4 years gets across the lethality of their military. And that's if they were on the border. They were about to invade Donbass. I mean, meaning it wasn't conceptual.
Mm-hmm. All right, Robbie, this next one's for you. Do you honestly believe, this is from Carlos, Jesus is God, was born of a virgin, and resurrected?
Yes.
Care to elaborate?
No, that's what the Bible says. Yeah, 100%. He's part of the triune gods, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. He came to this earth as a living sacrifice, as a willing sacrifice to pay a debt that I could never pay. And he went to the cross for crimes that I committed that he did not. He resurrected. He is at the right hand of the Father. One day he's coming back. And I'm looking forward to that day.
Robbie, what about people who were crucified that weren't Jesus? Didn't they accept the same amount of suffering? I mean, like, there were plenty of people that were in Roman cells that were tortured and ripped apart.
Sure.
Why was his suffering more than theirs?
The difference is that Jesus is the perfect sacrifice. So he never sinned. He was God and he was man. And so if you read the Bible, the curse of sin comes from Adam. So everyone who's born of a man has sin in them. That's why we're all sinners. What sets Jesus apart is that he was born of a virgin. He's a second Adam without the seed of man. And that's why he's called the Son of Man. That the first one of the titles actually uses in the book of Daniel. And he is the Lamb without blemish. He is the perfect sacrifice. And his blood is the blood that washes away all sin. And here's the great thing about salvation. The thing that sets Christianity apart from every other religion is, like, for example, Buddhism. You know, you have to reach for nirvana. You have to keep on trying and trying until you finally get there. Or Islam, or even Catholicism, Orthodoxy, to an extent, teach that you have that something that you have to do to get yourself closer to God to earn salvation. What Jesus taught, what he teaches, what the Bible teaches, is that God came down to us, that salvation is a gift. A gift is not a wage. If it's something you have to earn, it's not a gift anymore, it's a wage. That's the difference. Salvation is a gift of God, and you just got to be humble enough to accept it. Just accept it. Yes, I am a sinner. I need to be saved. I need a savior. And that's all it takes.
I know, but that is
this religion makes it difficult.
No. What I'm saying is, but that's still doing something. That's still a cognitive leap that you have to make, where you have to believe a bunch of items associated with. Like, meaning it's, you can say it's a gift, fair enough, and you can say that the other religions require you to do something. I'm saying that also requires you to do something.
Sure.
Also, Jesus never stumped his toe and cursed. It's like, mother.
Never did?
Or is that just not a sin at that point?
Well, one of the sins, and y'all have seen this on the show before, especially if I get worked up, I have no problem sometimes letting the colorful exodus fly. I try not to, but sometimes it happens, especially if I say Israel, usually an F word comes before that, right?
Yeah. You're just the man.
But it's just because I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
My soul is, but my soul still lives in this body. My body is still still sinful flesh. It's the soul that's regenerated. Now, one day my soul and my body will be reunited together whenever that happens. I don't know when that will be. But no, Jesus, he never sinned.
Wow. Interesting, interesting.
And sin and faith, I've talked to Ted about this before. Faith and rationality are completely counter each other. Like, I can never prove to you what I believe, and I should never want to.
I get that. I mean, I have family that's religious, and yeah, faith is, you know, the belief in things that are unseen, et cetera.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, to answer your question, Carlos, yes, I do believe it with every fiber of my being.
By the way, you know, I've read my Bible, not as much as you, but in my opinion, Jesus definitely sinned. I don't know if we consider it a sin, but I mean, he lost his temper. He was intemperate.
Yeah, anger is not a sin.
So anger is not a sin?
No. The Bible says be angry and sin not. So whenever he went to the temple and he flipped those tables.
Isn't anger one of the seven deadly sins?
No.
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 No, okay. It's not.
Yeah, right. I do know that. I do know.
No, I mean, it's no. I mean,
he's always the son, either, right? He didn't really honor his mother.
Sure, he did.
He vanished for 14 years.
We don't know what he did because the gospel didn't start being written until he was 30. But we don't know. We simply don't know. I mean, a lot of people try and conjecture and stuff, and they try to guess. Yeah. I mean, we just don't know. And one of the biggest arguments that's out there right now, and it's really kind of ridiculous, is, well, Jesus is black, or Jesus, what did Jesus look like? Yeah, it doesn't matter.
This way, and became the Buddha or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. If what he looked like was important, the Bible would have described him. It doesn't, because it does not matter. It doesn't matter.
I don't think that's why it's described. I think it's because everyone pretty much looked the same then.
Well, not in Levant, because I mean, you had Greeks, you had Egyptians, you had Africans. I mean, no, the Ethiopians over there. Philip baptized one. So, I mean, to say that everyone just looked whatever like a Jew was back then, who the hell knows? You got to remember. I mean, the Levant's been has been an invasion path for millennia.
That's
so mixed up.
I understand. It doesn't look from the longest time, black churches. We're worshiping white Jesus.
Yep.
Now, you can make the case that it doesn't matter, but I think it doesn't matter in the sense of a fish not caring about water until you realize that it's water. Like, meaning, is there a consequence for people around the world of different races worshiping a white Jesus?
I think
there's any propaganda vibe in it. And by the way, I'm not taking a position on this. I'm just curious.
I think this is one of the biggest reasons why the Bible commands us against making, you know, graving images and idols, that kind of thing. It's because people really want to just dive into this thing. One of the biggest sins, and I use that word deliberately, that the church did, especially the church in the Americas, was segregating itself based on national and racial lines. The Bible is very clear. We are all of one blood. If you read the book of Philemon, I mean, it's a letter. It's not even a book. It's maybe 1,000 words. It's very small. And the point that Paul is beating through time and time and time and time again is that we are all one blood. We are all one people. We all bleed red. And one of the biggest scourges that the Roman Catholic Church has to answer for is religious dogma and the way that it twists scripture, even to this day, where it tries to marry religion with politics.
Right.
And it's disgusting, it's hateful, and it's a hurtful thing.
By the way, I looked it up. Wrath/anger is one of the seven deadly sins.
Wrath is
the same thing as anger.
No, because you got to remember, Is the lawgiver above the law? The answer is yes. So, for example,
So the definition of wrath is an uncontrolled, is an uncontrolled feeling of hatred, rage, and vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, that's enough, a little like money, you know, money changer-ish, right?
Well, you got to remember, Jesus came. So Jesus
promoted whoopouts in the.
Well, he did, and also
he's been seething about it for a while.
Money changer.
Well, Jesus said, I mean, he sat down and he took the time. No, he didn't find a whip. He sat down and he made this whip. He braided it. And so one of the things that people, and this especially in the West, people have a Star Wars view of Christianity. Like they think that it's Yoda. Like, hate the sin, not the sinner. That's not in the Bible. That came from Gandhi. Or, you know, talk about this thing about anger, about being wrathful, talk about that hate is wrong. The Bible never teaches those things.
I don't think Jesus himself would have said that he wasn't a sinner. Right? He's divine, but he's also human.
Correct. But sin comes from the Father. So if Joseph was his father, then Jesus could not have been God.
You said sin comes from the Father?
From the human man. So for example, the reason why my kids are sinners, the reason why my teenagers are jerks and are disobedient little pricks sometimes, is because I myself am a sinner, and whenever I impregnated my wife, that comes through me. That is why
you're saying your spunk is sinful. It's like your inner seed is what.
Correct. That's why Jesus was born of a virgin.
Bible where?
I can find it for you. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I can 100% find it for you. I promise you, I can.
That's wow. So from your point, basically, sin comes from Adam and from every man from then on.
Because if you go back to the creation story, really where things fell apart was Adam's failure to lead his wife. He was there with if you sit down in Sunday school, what you hear about is Eve is walking around in the garden.
Does it have agency in this?
What are you talking about? Let me finish my point first.
Adam's inability to control his wife.
Correct.
Eve ate the fruit.
Correct.
First.
And then she convinced Adam to.
Right.
That's when the fall happened.
That's what I'm getting at, though. That's wow. I find this to be fascinating.
Sure.
So Eve doesn't have agency that she ate the fruit. The issue becomes Adam for not controlling his wife.
It was because Adam is the one who got the commandment, don't eat of this tree. So let me just unpack this real quick. Yeah. So if you go back and if you take the time to actually read Genesis chapter 3, and I know this is going off the rails here, but
no, I'm fascinated by this. I've never I'm fascinated by this because it seems like the woman is getting a pass, and I don't know why.
It's because she does. She did not get the command from God. So when Adam was created, when God created Adam, he told him you can eat of any fruit.
If you don't know about the rule, then you can't commit a sin. So if I don't know, I'm not allowed to rob liquor stores. Like, it's totally cool.
Yep, pretty much, because where there is no law, then you're governed by natural law, right?
Okay, all right.
So the issue was that Adam himself, the man Adam, he was told, do not eat of this fruit. Do not eat of this tree. The day you do is the day you'll die.
Right.
So,
but Adam didn't die, though. God lied.
He did not die. God did not die. Adam did die. His soul died. That's the whole part. That's the whole point about being born again. Whenever you're born, your soul is dead. That's what it means to be born again. When you accept Christ as your Lord and Savior, your soul is reborn. You are regenerated. You become a new man. That's one of the constant themes in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The old man and the new man. The old man is this flesh. It's my body. It's my skin. This is the old man. The new man is your soul that's regenerated within you. That is your soul. Your soul never sins. It's a fight inside of you between the old man and the new. Now, to answer your question, the command was given to Adam. Do not eat of this tree or thou shalt surely die. Adam did not tell Eve. So they're walking around, and again, in Sunday school, JT, I assume that you grew up in the South. I imagine you went to Sunday school when you were a kid. One of the ways that this kind of taught us that Eve is walking around in the garden by herself. And the snake starts talking to her and says, hey, eat of this fruit. She eats of it. And then, And then she gets the fruit, she takes it to Adam, convinces him to, and then he eats it. Is that what you were taught?
Yeah.
More or less?
Yeah.
The problem is the Bible doesn't say that. They were together. They were together. The Bible does not say that she was separated from the man. The Bible, you can't put stuff into the text that's not there. So the snake was talking to Eve. She took the fruit. She ate it. Adam should have stopped her, said, no, you cannot do this because the Lord commanded us, do not eat of this fruit. He did not do that. It was a failure of leadership on his part. He did not control his wife.
Real quick, why didn't God know that Adam was going to eat the apple?
I think he did know.
Well, that's problematic, right?
Well, because you got to remember, he's omnipresent and he's omniscient. So he knows everything's going to happen.
I know, but that's what I'm getting at. So Adam is sitting in hell right now.
So what's the purpose? Yes.
He's not in hell. Adam's saved.
But God
the purpose
knew.
Of the test is to find something out, right? What did God find out? Who found out what about the fact that, about Adam's nature from this test?
What it is a test of free will. Like, are you going to obey? What are you going to do? But at the end of the day.
There's no free will. God already knows what's going to happen.
God already knew.
I understand that. But because he already knew, that's the whole reason why the plan of the cross was even set up before the creation happened. If you go through, like for example, if you read the Old Testament, it talks about the Savior of the world, who the Lamb of God, who was slain before the foundations of the earth. So he knew this stuff was going to happen in the first place. That's what's so amazing about the way that Christianity works, is God knew that his creation was going to fall. But he still went ahead and did it anyway. That's something we can't comprehend, because us, with the way that we see things, with our small finite minds, we look at something that's like, well, this isn't going to work. Maybe I should just do away with it and start over. Just blow it up and do a hard reset. God is able to see every single person that has been born from Adam all the way through whenever he pulls the plug on this thing. How long is that going to be? I don't know. Maybe it happened in our lifetime. Maybe 1,000 years from now. I have no idea. No clue.
Before Netanyahu was created as a soul, did God know that he was going to do what he did on this planet?
Hitler, everything else. Because everyone has a choice. We're not predestined to be whatever it is we're going to be. We all have a choice about the kind of person we're going to be. And he knows what those paths are going to look like.
I get that. But are there people in hell right now?
Oh, yeah. Billions.
So God Billions knew of people. Those people were going to be in hell when he created them.
They had the choice. If they rejected him, then yes, they were going to go to hell. But if they chose him, they would be in heaven with him right now. It's a choice that they made.
God made somebody that he knew was going to go to hell.
Correct.
For eternity.
Yeah, or go to heaven, depending on the choice that they make. Like, for example, you Jamarl Thomas, you Ted Rall. The biggest desire of my life, because you're both my friends, is for you both to become, for y'all both to be saved and be with me in heaven one day. I have no idea if that's a choice that either one of y'all ever make. I hope to God that you do, because I love you both like brothers. But that's a choice that you make. And you can choose to be with your God in heaven, or you can choose to tell God, I have no interest in you. I have no interest in gift. I want to be separated from you forever. In which case, God will then allow you to make that choice. The choice is, though, is that you'll then be in hell for all of eternity because God cannot abide sin. That's why I don't want to have happen for y'all.
I guess what bothers me is that God created me knowing I'm going to end up in hell.
Like, that's a choice that you make. But that's a choice that you make.
I get that. But if I design a computer program called Life. Mm-hmm. And I have this ability to create emotions, feelings, all these things to make sentient beings. But I create them in a way because I'm God. Mm-hmm. And I know that at the end of this life, that thing is going to hell. Whether they, quote, choose it or not choose it, I'm creating something that I'm going to basically let suffer for eternity.
Yeah, if it chooses to.
But God knows my choice. Before I'm even made.
You have two choices before you right now. That's one of the reasons why one of the foundational commandments is way back in the book of Deuteronomy is this day choose life. We all have a choice that we're able to make. One of the things, like for example, that the seven-day Advents is that they teach, I think it's the seven-day Advents. is that it's only a very select number of people who are from all of eternity who get to go to heaven, and that's it. Right. Everyone else goes to hell.
Right.
That's what you're talking about right now. Which is, you know, you're either a selected member of this election, which election means selection, in which case there's no election at all, or no matter what you do, you're predestined to burn in hell. I don't know what God that is. That God is evil and is repugnant, and I would hate him with every fiber of my being. The God that I worship, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Savior of the universe, the Lamb, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, he gives us a choice.
But it's not a choice.
It is a choice. You can choose to live with him forever, or you can choose to be without him forever.
The paradox, right, is, Robbie, is that, like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Jamarl, but I think the paradox is, if I give you a choice, mm-hmm. and I'm an omniscient, omnipotent being, mm-hmm. I know in advance what decision you'll make as a result of that choice, then really, truly, because my foreknowledge means that it's predestination, which means you didn't really have a choice at all, right?
Yeah, even if you make the argument that I have a choice in this.
And you do.
You are creating me, correct. Knowing full well at the instant of creation that I'm going to bust hell wide open and I'm going to be here for eternity.
If you choose to do so. So again, so you're thinking about, you're trying to treat this like a computer program, like a one or a zero.
Because it is.
But no, it's not. Both of these things are possible at the same exact time. Like today, JT, you could choose either right now or after the show, whatever, to give your life to Christ. That's a choice that you could make.
I know, Robbie, but whatever choice I make, even if you say it's my choice.
Well, Robbie, but if God exists, then the God knows what choice JT is going to make.
He knows both choices you're going to make. He'll know the path that your life will take depending on the choice that you make.
I know, but he is creating me, meaning I'm creating a being that I know is going to suffer forever.
If you choose
say,
it.
Even though I could say this being has a choice, mm-hmm. but I'm creating this being already knowing what the answer to this choice is going to be at the moment of creation, which means that for all intents and purposes, for a blip in time, he will exist. And for the rest of time, he will be in hell forever.
Correct.
That being that is creating me already knows what I'm going to do and where I'm going to end up. You could say it's a choice, but ultimately
choice.
You created something to suffer forever.
Okay. If you chose to become a Christian today, would you go to hell?
No, Robbie, you missed my point. I need you to engage.
I am engaging. I think what we're doing is that we're talking past each other.
Suffering forever.
Correct.
He knows the choice. It's not a choice if he knows the choice. I don't know. I don't know, man. That's
you're not making any sense. I think we're talking past each other.
I don't think we are. You are making the point of saying it's a choice, which I accept. Okay, it's a choice. Let's say the individual has free will.
Okay.
By the same token, though, you're creating me knowing that despite the free will, that I'm going to hell forever. And I'm saying there's something inherently problematic with that. If I build a program mm-hmm. and I have suffering for that program, but I say it's a choice, but I already know that in the creation of this thing, that this thing will suffer forever.
But a program doesn't have a choice. You do.
But I'm giving it a choice. I'm giving it a programs.
No, man, we can't create life. We can't create sentience.
How do you know that?
Because it is impossible.
How do you know that?
I don't think that's impossible at all.
Okay, then show me. Give me an example where human beings have created life.
I know, well, Robbie. There were times where people didn't think people could fly, and they didn't put airplanes.
Well, that's something else, though. So one is a metaphysical thing where you are actually creating a life.
We know from the bottom of at the bottom of Lake Baikal in Russia, uh-huh. there is there's a hot lava vent that empties out into the bottom of the lake, and life generates there just from heat plus amino acids and water. That's right. It, and it just does. So we know that there's no question. Sooner rather than later, under lab conditions, we will be able to do the same thing because it's not that complicated, really. And we'll be able to do that. We will be able to create life.
I think the issue is sentience. No, I think that's what Robbie, I think, is making.
Well, over the course of evolution, those forms would become sentient.
There's no such thing as evolution. It doesn't exist. That's a lie. That's one of the biggest hell. That's one of the biggest lies that the devil's ever put out.
But that's
just like saying the Earth is billions of years old. No, it's not.
But Robbie, that doesn't explain the perfect human form that emerged in the form of Donald Trump.
But it's because beauty. I mean, Donald Trump is not what I would use as a picture of a perfect human being. But I think the disconnect here is that we see things from two very, very different things.
That's true. And it's fair.
And so what I see is every choice that we make throughout the course of our life, if you are omniscient, if you're omnipresent, which we are not, so we can't even comprehend this. We're talking so far above our levels right now, at least I am, that I have a hard time even trying to comprehend the argument that is I'm trying to make here. Not because I'm stupid, but because my brain is simply too small. I cannot understand God. If I could understand God, he'd be way too small to be my God. First off, no, if your God's that small, you can understand him. You're kind of crazy. Second, every choice that we make from our first breath to our last breath, my maker knows what those choices are for every person that's ever lived. Every choice that you make, and also every choice that you could have made. You could choose one thing.
If I'm God and I know, not only I know everything that's going to happen and can happen, will happen, and not only that, I make it happen, and I know, and I see it happen, then why do I even bother to make anything happen? Right?
For your pleasure.
What's the point? Like, I know, it's like I know I can do it, I will do it. Like, what was the point of the great flood?
The Bible explains that.
Human beings pissed you off. Well, you knew they were going to piss you off. You're God. And if I know something, it's kind of like, I don't know, like when I was in college, I dated this really slutty girl. It was actually like a feature. I liked the fact that she was slutty. If she was wild in bed, she was slutty. She slept around. Then she told me she slept with some other dude. I wasn't pissed because I knew she was slutty when I met her. So the point is, like, if you know that you make human beings like to sin, you know they're gonna, you're gonna, you know, you know that if you mosey up a mountain to collect some tablets, by the time you come back, they'll be worshiping Baal. Then, like, you can't be pissed, right? Why are you pissed?
Because he's a righteous God. And the reason why he did the flood in the first place wasn't because they were sinning. It was because of all the violence they were doing against each other. That's one of the reasons why in the Bible. There's only a handful of crimes that you could commit that warranted the death penalty. One of them is murder.
I feel like Lucifer. Oh, so I don't know if you've ever watched Supernatural, but there was a scene where Lucifer finally met God and had.
If ever watched what?
Supernatural, that's the name of the show. But they had a guy on the show who was supposed to be God, and they had a guy on the show who was supposed to be Lucifer, and Lucifer had this kind of like. How have you forsaken me in this way? Like, he was pissed. Mm-hmm. Because it was kind of the argument that Tevron made. It's like, dude, you made me. How are you forsaking your children?
My mom taught me to be rebellious and taught me about the family history of, like, resistance. And then she was, like, pissed off that, like, I wasn't getting, like, a bunch of corporate jobs in the media. Like, because I was like, woman... This is your fault. You made me this way.
Like, I'm your child.
Right? I guess that comes down to if you believe that free will is a feature or a bug. Because, like, for me,
I think we have
partial. And again, I'm looking at this from a very human perspective, because that's all I can give you. I'm as flawed as y'all are. I'm far from perfect. I'm not Donald Trump. So, but with me, being the inferior human that I am. If I created everyone like what JT was saying, where everyone is this program and everyone just operates one exact way, and if I want you to legitimately praise me and honor me and love me, if I don't give you the choice to say, no, I don't want you, or yes, I do.
Then it's not. Then it's
then, it, then what different? Then what point does it make? That's the whole issue with free will. You have to choose if you're going to follow the Lord. The same way with the angels. Lucifer's the only time the word Lucifer is mentioned is in Isaiah 14, and it talks about Lucifer how far that thou hast fallen. He was the chief cherub. He was the musician. He's the one who played before the throne of God. He was the coveted cherub. His pride was his sin.
Why?
Because he wanted to be like the Most High. He wanted that adoration. He wanted that worship. He wanted that praise.
I think so.
Oh, for sure.
My mom didn't have to create me. Correct. Meaning my mom and dad never had to come together in order to create a child. Meaning,
or she could have killed you in the womb.
Well, no, I guess my thing is it's somewhat of a vainful thing to create life in general. Meaning nobody acts to be here.
Correct.
If we're looking at this from the standpoint of a universe that was being created by a God, what is the point in God creating these beings? None of these beings have to be created. Meaning the fact that I'm being created is something that God is doing on his own in a certain act of vanity, if we're being blunt.
Sure.
And in the context of the act of vanity, he didn't need to create the universe. He didn't create the earth. He didn't need to create any of this stuff. And yet you're creating something that didn't exist, knowing that many of them are going to die and go to hell.
Correct.
That's not a little vain fool? That's not a sin?
No.
Vanity?
Nope. It is not, because he created all things were created for him, by him, for his pleasure.
Right, but he didn't have to.
I mean, no, of course not. He didn't have to.
Crafting,
but he chose to.
He's also guilty, to come full circle here, of wrath.
That's because he is the judge. So, for example, so Ted, let me ask you a question. You're a father. When your kid, when he misbehaved, did you punish him?
Sometimes.
Okay. There you go. Sometimes. Same thing with God. Do you know what grace is? Know the differences between grace and mercy?
No. Tell me.
Great. So mercy is whenever you screw up and the judge gives you a lesser punishment than that which you deserved.
Okay.
Grace is when you commit, is that when you screw up, you commit a crime or whatever else, and you're not punished for it at all. That's grace. That's what God is giving me. The wages of sin are death. That's full stop. I am a sinner deserving of a devil's hell. That is what I deserve. Me, Robbie West. You, Ted Rawl. You,
God,
Jamal.
God,
everyone listening to this in the sound of my voice, you're all sinners, just like I am.
Thank you that way.
You can accept salvation. You can accept the grace that God gives you. You don't have to go to hell.
But
it's the easiest thing in the world. It's the easiest thing in the world not to go there. It's something you have to choose to do.
If God creates a bunch of creatures who are hardwired for sin, then isn't God creating sin?
God did create sin. God created evil. All things are created by God.
I'm being punished for a situation I didn't ask for.
Correct. Because Adam screwed up. And that's why God is giving you an out in the person of Jesus Christ.
God didn't have to create this stuff. And he's creating stuff purely for the sake of blessing hell wide open. Meaning he's creating a torture for eternity and creating a being to inhabit torture.
So I have a question for the two of y'all. Let's see if y'all can answer this question. Why did God create hell?
He's fickle.
No, why did God create hell? What was hell originally created for? Tell me.
Oh, I don't know.
No,
I'm not in the mindset.
Hell was created originally for Satan and his angels. It was never intended for humans. If you go to hell, it's because you choose to go there.
Wait, so was it like their lair, like the Batcave?
No, it's a lake of fire, man.
But it was like...
It is a lake of fire.
So Satan didn't want to be hanging out there. He's just...
No, but he's not there now. Satan's walking around on this earth with the rest of us. He is walking around here on this earth. He is the God of this world, the Prince of the Air is what the Bible
says. By the way, Robert, we're giving you a hard time.
Oh, I know.
And I'm apologizing in advance.
No, you have to. Look, JT, no, you have to understand.
Sorry, boy, he can handle him.
No, man, listen, something you have to understand here. I enjoy this kind of stuff because what it does, it sharpens my mind. It helps me make a better argument. And frankly,
I used to go on with right wingers all the time, like, you know, like on Fox and stuff. And I miss it because it kept me sharp.
No, for sure. And the thing is, the things I'm telling y'all, I can't prove any of it. I cannot prove anything of what I'm telling you right now.
Of course not. I mean,
none of it at all.
This is inherently not provable, right? So,
well, by definition, it is.
Yeah,
but what I can tell you, though, from a sincere place in my heart, because you're both my friends, you're both my brothers. I've told John this the same thing. People are listening to me in the chat right now. Y'all could rob you some kind of crazy retarded right winger. Fair enough. Maybe I am. Maybe when this life ends, it's just over and it's all over and done with. And I mean, I'm just a blip.
I just believe
that none of this matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
If I am right, I want the people who I love, including the two of you, to be with me in heaven.
I mean that
with every fiber of my being. I don't want that old song. Will the circle be unbroken? That's about family. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with much of a family. God's given me the ability to actually build one of my own, and you two are my family.
Yeah,
I want you both to be in heaven with me one day. The people in the chat who are over here mocking me, fair enough. You can. That is your God's given choice. I want nothing more than for you to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and come to heaven. I don't want anyone to go to hell. Not even Benjamin Netanyahu. I wish that scumbag would get right with the Lord and get saved. I don't think he can. No. I think he's a reprobate. I don't want anyone to go to hell for all of eternity. That's why that slur saying go to hell I hate that more than anything. You're asking someone to burn for all of eternity. And that's the last thing that I ever want for anybody. And so, yes, answer your question. Do I believe the stuff I'm telling you? 100%.
That's a good place to stop, I think, because we're already running over. And I know that even though I may get my punishment in the next world, I'll get my punishment in this world if I don't get my car to the auto mechanic on time for my 2 o'clock appointment. So I'm going to call it there. Thanks, guys, so much. So fun, so interesting, for real. And we will see you guys back for the regular D program, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're there Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. So we'll be back Tuesday, May 12th. See you then.
Bye, fellas.
Have a good one, guys. Be safe.